The Shutdown Full Cast.
That was a good one. That was a really good one.
Full send.
The notes of vibrato that are coming in over time.
It was operatic.
Full cast, half mast.
Thank you. Thank you. I enjoy getting us off of the right note, because tonight on the internet's only college football podcast, we are going to explore a mystery, a conundrum, a riddle, which is, what is this magic surrounding Cincinnati, Ohio, that it has suddenly, for the year 2022, become the football capital, all right? The mecca for this fine gridiron sport. Why has Cincinnati managed to corner the market on football excellence? We have brought in an expert for this. Jane Costin, say hello.
Hello.
The rest of us, our usual roster, will introduce ourselves in turn. I am Spencer Hall, live from Atlanta, Georgia, with a yelping hound dog next to me here in the Shutdown Fullcast studios. Across from me is Holly Anderson. Hello, Holly.
Hello.
And then from beautiful Kennesaw, Georgia, in his rocking chair, as always,
framed in golden hues,
Jason Kirk. Hello, Jason.
Yeah, I really don't know where these rocking chairs came from. They've just always been on the porch. I could not possibly tell you their origin.
I feel like they were issued to you. I feel like that just sort of happened.
I mean,
Jason was born and returned home, and they were like, take a load off.
Like, I have never opted into rocking chair. It's just, it was here when we got here. That's all I know. And why would you get rid of it? It's a chair that moves.
But only a little. It's like this.
You don't want to move a lot, okay. Then you're somewhere else. That's a car.
So I noticed something. The funniest part about going to yet another new Buc-ee's, which I got to do this weekend, and go to the Daytona edition, is seeing that the Georgia ones are indeed the only ones without the outdoors gear. Like every other state, there's an outdoor kitchen set up. Like, you might go outside and exert yourself and then get an animal and then clean it and cook it. And you might need supplies for that. No, Georgia's like, we know.
In that little entrance in Georgia, it's like, here's a cornhole table.
Yeah, they do.
It's a cornhole table that's up on, hand to God, it's a cornhole table that's up on sticks so you don't have to bend over so far to pick up the beanbag.
Yeah, it's a long way down there, Georgian. Why don't you just pick it up where it is?
You want me to work for my food? Public subs are $8. That's all the work I'm doing.
Even the Daytona one. The Daytona one had the full outdoor kitchen set up. And I was like, oh, God, they really did the research, didn't they? And they were like, yeah, Georgians don't actually like going outside or doing anything wildlife-y.
So we're even lazy by Daytona standards.
Yes, you're lazy by Daytona standards.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because let me explain my favorite thing about the Daytona infield. We were there for the Rolex 24, which is the 24-hour endurance race. But regardless of whether it's that or the upcoming 500 or something smaller and less interesting, Daytona management has an aggressive level of disinterest in whatever kind of personal vehicle you want to bring in. If I had thought about this ahead of time, I would have made a scavenger hunt. But if it has wheels and you can move around on it, they just let it in. It's beautiful.
Yeah, Jane, this is the full libertarian infield. I actually thought of you when I was in there, because
there's,
I was like,
Datsun racing truck parked nose to nose with like a Mazda concept car from the early aughts.
It was 34 degrees at around 2 or 3 a.m. So people were starting the kind of fires that you don't do in a pit. There were people who had nice artisanal fire
like
pit
hobo
setups.
Fires.
No, there were people who
like
had
train hobo fires from the 30s.
Who had straight just been like, I don't see anything against bonfires. I'm going to dig a hole. Like digging a hole and making
so
a fire in the Daytona infield.
You were at like a Daytona Hooverville. Like,
kind of.
It
It has never been that cold, which actually pretty. I'm writing about this for Road and Track, so there will be a story about this in the magazine in a couple of weeks. But they, like, even in wind tunnel conditions, they had never tested the cars at this temperature. None of them.
Yeah.
And it thankfully did not descend into enough humidity to create like frozen mist at 3 a.m, which was the worry, because like, hey, what happens if you put racing tires, which via the rules of the race you're not allowed to warm before you put on the car, what happens if you put them out onto black ice at 200 miles an hour?
Now they know. Thank you, Daytona. Thank you. Yeah.
Oh, it was a blast. We're going back next year, all of us.
It was a lot like, imagine if you could do like Burning Man in like second gear. If you could do Burning Man in second gear without the pretense.
And there are showers there.
Yeah, and there are showers. And nudity is to be kept inside the campers.
Yeah, okay.
At best.
A weirdly, weirdly small amount of weed. Like, I think that's the first outdoor event I've maybe ever been to in my life in Florida that smells more like cigars than weed.
Oh, that's interesting.
It is weird.
Yeah, that's...
Like, it's confusing to the nose.
That's, I wanted to open the ceremonies this week with, important news from Bensalem, Pennsylvania. As we know, Pennsylvania, I argue, is the funniest state. Like, it's the funniest. It's, yeah, by far.
That's a big claim.
You said this before. Right.
Yeah, Philly, easily, probably, like, I think that's our funniest city by far is Philly, just in terms of senses of humor. I think that's just what you get when you get a place that has the influences of Penn State football, a love for contact sports, the Eagles, the Phillies. And on top of all that, a fondness for making pools out of dumpsters. That's just the greatness that Philly offers at every single turn.
That's not funny. That's art.
Well, speaking of art, in Bensalem, Pennsylvania, there was a 40-person fight. A 40-person fight in a Golden Corral. Why? Because they ran out of steak. Because they ran out of... Yes, yes, Holly has a question.
How... What was their plan for procuring more steak via fisticuffs?
That's how it works in Minecraft. Once you punch someone to death, then their body is steaks.
Ooh.
So it looks like this is right outside Philly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they said closing rural hospitals in the Steel Belt was going to produce medical innovation. And by God, they were right.
It's a 40-person fight. How do you decide to be number 40?
Do you decide to be number 8?
Yeah,
that's not like how
the Rumble works. The last one in has the likeliest, the best chance to win.
Because it's the buildup of massive brawls. It's like when you watch like South Korean parliamentary sessions that turn into massive brawls. Like, there's a decision-making process where you go from 2... to 3, I guess, I always presume that then you go to 5. You go to 5, mm-hmm. One more person adds in. It's how you go from 6 to 7 that I don't understand. Because 6 people fighting seems like, it's sort of like, you know, it's like a golden ratio type situation where I'm like, this all makes sense. Everybody's even. You got somebody to fight. Then there's like a 7th person who's like, I'm going to take all of them. But like, imagine that in South Korean parliamentary terms. But like, that's the question I have. It's like 50 somehow. I'm like, okay. You saw 49 people fighting and you were like, well, this seems wrong. And you have to go in because you need even. I get that. But it's the 7th person who starts fighting. Like, who was 7? Who sees 6 people fighting and is like, I can help?
I think the math thing for me is once you get to 22, because at that point, I mean, we watch 22 people fight each other all
the time
long.
It's true.
From that point on is when the math goes crazy for me, because we already have a regulation football game. What are the rest of you folks doing?
The key number for me here is 5, because you can have one person takes a swing. And it's fairly easy for me, a veteran of a whole lot of football internet fight videos in a whole lot of stadiums, it's very natural for me to imagine one buddy trying to pull one person back and one buddy trying to pull the second combatant back and becoming embroiled themselves. It's that second tier where person number 5 decides, I am the arbiter of both of these fights now, and inserts themselves and starts swinging on everyone. This to me is where the cosmic plate tilts.
I think you can be number 23 in a fight if you run in saying, I got too much Bama in me. That's it. You can be the extra man on the field if you say, I got too much Bama in me. It's perfectly acceptable. I also love this, by the way. Do you want to know how you show that you are about it in life, that you are not to be fucked with at any turn? Fight and risk a felony and serious injury over Golden Corral steak. I don't mean steak.
This is my additional question. Did they think that steak would be produced if they fought long enough? Okay.
If you eat enough steak, you're better at fighting because blood makes your muscles grow. And then once you fight, you are better at creating steak. So looking at the CBS Philly, it says more than 40 people were in the fight. I love this. Former employee Dylan Becker, so he was like called in, like they called him and you got to see this shit. He didn't even work there. It's just the crew at the Golden Corral was like, Dylan, come check this shit out. And Dylan says,
Dylan likes,
quote,
a good steak fight.
Dylan says, I've never seen nothing like that in Golden Corral before. And I love how specific it is, because I mean, if you're from Philly, you've seen shit like that, but at Golden Corral,
I also appreciate the work of Alex Rios, another witness, who said it began because he received his steak before another person who was in line first. But then he explains, I had a rare steak, which is a lot faster to cook than a well-done steak. That's why I got my steak first. Yes, Alexis Rios, you did, because you made a good decision. Imagine waiting for a well-done steak at Golden...
ordering rare beef at a Golden Corral.
Oh, that's why they were mad. I mean, have you ever been at a table where there are, you know, six or seven people eating and the steak is the meal, if it's like a steakhouse, right? Because that's like default expense account meal is, I don't know, let's just go to a steakhouse because guys have no taste.
Let's go to Ruth's Chris and cheat on our spouses with some farmer reps.
Farmer reps.
Is it? Farmer reps.
Let me ask.
I need to get to know a good farmer. Do you know a strong one?
Not a farmer, a farmer reps.
A farmer, yeah.
No, that's what it's called when you, you press them, so to speak. So it's
Then you're doing the farmer rep.
It's preceded by a farmer's carry.
How many reps you doing that farmer for?
I rep old Windmill Jones. He's the strongest farmer in South Dakota.
I set my farmer personal best just last night.
I can't stop thinking about this Dylan person. Like, the phone by his bedside rings, and he picks it up, and there's no answer, and it's still ringing, and he opens the hidden drawer in the nightstand, and he pulls out the special phone. He pulls the phone out. He pulls the second phone out of the locked drawer, and he's like, it's time.
I want to be this person in people's lives. I want people to call me when they're like, dude, there's a 40-person brawl at the steakhouse. Call Spencer.
At your former workplace. Like, when there was a 40-person brawl at Vox Media, and we were all called in to watch.
Good one.
That would be... I'm trying to think of how that would have worked, and it would have involved the SB Nation Vox News brawl. That could have never happened, but, man.
It would have been fast.
No matter who wins, we all lose, because anybody who touches... It's poop hands.
The man's got hands. He's got hands.
He's definitely just got hands. From an
I think,
jug.
But the Warhammer term for that is plague boss. He's a plague boss.
Do we have to cut all this?
No. No. She hasn't said a thing.
Sorry, we'll work on this. Jane, welcome to the show. Spencer, you said that you wished people would call you when things like this happen.
Watch or to participate? Okay.
Watch.
Okay. But we kind of have a see something, say something program of a sort going on in the full cast Twitter mentions. Because I need to now, first of all, thank you to everybody who sent us the Golden Corral fight. There were a lot of you. We were extremely happy to receive this in time for taping. And now I have to bring you to another news story that was sent to us by alert readers. Jason and Spencer may already know this, so Jane and Cerber, buzz in if you think you have reached the point in the headline where you can complete the sentence. All right, you ready? Mm-hmm. Suspects, sorry, this is from NBC. Suspects in vandalism incident that stranded zoo ride passengers are San Diego-based Marines.
Ah, yes!
The Marines are back! And the Marines are back, and they are still perpetrating attacks. They're still perpetrating attacks on wildlife. Just willy fucking nilly.
is this like the Marine story that I heard where this guy was like, yeah, I had to tell a dude that I'd seen his wife's butt, and he's like, well, where did you see my wife's butt? And they're like, yeah, it was basic when we were tasing each other for fun, and she thought that'd be the easiest place, so that we did that. And the dude was like, oh yeah, that's understandable, that's cool, that's hoorah, Semper Fi, baby. This is, by the way, I want one thing, though,
you didn't hear about the incident. Do you
want
to hear about the incident?
Yes, go ahead.
All right. Four people between the ages of 20 and 24 arrested for felony vandalism. And I guess they put vandalism in here because they didn't have a better idea for what happened. What happened was people were riding the sky gondola over the zoo, and these four Marines started rocking the gondola back and forth to such violence that I guess it triggered the emergency systems and it caused the whole ride to stop. And so everyone was just stranded in the air until... See, who do you rescue when the Marines are the ones that have stuck the sky?
That I've been thinking deeply, you know, I think a lot about criminal justice reform issues, but that's the death penalty right there. If you do that, and a thing I am on, I'm sorry, you got to go to forever jail.
Counterpoint.
Forever jail.
What if the carceral state is just the gondola?
I think it is just a gondola.
Can I say a few words in defense of my clients, these American heroes? Who bravely served their country.
Please do.
Just two words, in fact. Just two words are all I need. Dudes rock.
Literally.
I'm going to acquit.
Jonesy, I'm going to fuck that giraffe.
I'm gonna fucking rock this gondola so hard that giraffe's going to fuck me.
That moment, that terrible moment where they realize what's happened. Like, dude, I think we fucking broke it. No, I mean, we got to jump. We got to get out of here.
Is this like a ski lift? Because if so, those things are hooked onto a cable with a mechanism that does not wrap all the way around the cable.
Yeah, yeah. It's like Busch Gardens.
The upside down boy who went over the swing set. That's what Marines are.
You know, they were thinking of jumping too. They were like, listen, if we can get to the ground, maybe if we can chain off, I'll hang on to you. You hang on to me.
Right? Yeah, yeah. And then what we'll do is once all four of us are hanging, we're dangling, we'll have a chain there.
We'll fart.
And then hold still. And then whoever's on top, they'll climb down and they'll be hanging from whoever was fourth. And we'll keep doing that until we reach the ground.
I would also like to note here that they were stranded for nearly 2 hours. And it stranded over 100 passengers. So, also, I'm looking at pictures of this, and they would have been stranded, fuck high up in the air. I would have lost. That's a war crime. That's a war crime. They gotta go to military. You gotta get a JAG involved in this. That's a war crime.
Oh,
that's
crimes. You're sending them to war jail?
Yeah, war jail. Got it. JAG. Get JAG involved. JAG gets involved with that, right? I just started watching NCIS Hawaii so that I can be in touch with the people. So I feel like I'm pretty well. I understand what's going on here.
JAG, that was a show.
The Marines love Drew Brees so much, we should just send these to Gitmo.
So this is over. This is over a zoo, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, sure is.
So the real possibility of them not only considering. Their options for exit, but also looking at the animals below and wondering if they can take them. That was a genuine consideration.
After dropping
here,
down,
right?
You're dropping down like 50 to 60 feet. So you drop 60 feet and then fight a lion. Yeah, I could see this.
After we enter tactical infiltration and then egress upon neutralization of the lion.
Light work, bro. Light work. I did lift 480. Yeah, I got.
And
this.
Then we'll just climb back up here and keep rocking, and eat our fucking lion steaks.
That's what we'll do. Yeah, bro. We can start a fire in this thing. It'll be fine.
Jonesy, we're stranded. We gotta repopulate the earth, bro.
Hold still.
Hold still, bro. Still.
You're a nurturer. I think you should have it.
It'll work, I swear. Look, that's what the line is.
I love you, Jonesy.
Fucking love
you. If
you
haven't partaken of Hand in the Dirt recently, I highly recommend the episode where they had Amanda Mull on. And I don't remember what brought this to her. Maybe she was talking about her dog, but she was talking about how she really loves animals. And Mike Felder, without missing a beat, goes, "What animals do you think you could fight?" I feel like the man missed his calling occasionally.
The yeah. best is that the images of this sky ride, by the way, are just all...
It's just
all
a gondola.
It's just all smiling families. It's just like, yeah, yeah. And then in one of them, four meatheads who are like, "Bro, I'm going to kick that orangutan's ass. Going to beat its ass. I'm going to beat its orange ass so hard there'll be orange on my foot."
I just want to be clear here. Of the animals you could have referenced, not an orangutan. Not in 100 years.
No. And no. The reach...
Oh,
but,
but
a marine would disagree.
Oh no, a marine's no, a marine's like, "No, bro, that's light work."
They would be incorrect. Sorry, they would disagree.
No, I got a low center of gravity. I'm gonna charge in like a cannonball at his ankles.
What? He doesn't have fucking legs. Orangutans don't have legs. They'd be like, "Orangutans don't have have legs." They'd be like, "No legs, man."
They don't know any fucking Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, they're built like Dr. Robotnik. There's just a rocket under there.
If you're imagine being like a 40-year-old Sumatran orangutan, you've seen things. You've done things. You're going to do things to that marine. It's going to be like Island of Dr. Moreau. It's going to be like the marine's coming out of the zoo like, I'm never going back.
Get ready to sip or die, motherfucker.
Jane positing the existence of a saw orangutan is my favorite thing that we've done in a while. Oh, let's play a game, Marine.
Bro, we gotta avenge Jonesy.
You've upset Dr. Chuckles.
Dr. Chuckles had to leave Indonesia. He's not here because we stole it from the jungle. He's here because he was extradited. He's the only orangutan ever convicted of human trafficking.
With the Hannibal Lecter mask. That's the one I want to fight.
That's the one. He was an arms dealer. No, I don't know how, but it worked. by the way, steakhouse, like I had one rogue steakhouse thought. You can fight at a Golden Corral steakhouse all you want. I want to go to a steakhouse and just start like a really nice one and start taking everyone's steaks off the table and see how long it takes to fight, because the harumphing of the dudes, right? Bro,
okay, don't touch my steak, bro.
Don't touch my steak. Just start
dudes, don't
them.
Touch dudes' steaks, bro.
All right, I have a map. The Skyfari West gondola line flies, or begins in the northern frontier section of the zoo. It flies over something that's pretty small that I can't see. Some kind of, well, this could go one of two ways. It's either a northern, like a northern Siberian tiger situation.
Oh,
or
no.
It's some kind of northern quadruped. It might just be like, you know, a deer or something, like a mountain goat or something.
I got
but either
that,
way,
bro.
Bad. Panda exhibit, second. That's just going to be smelly if you fall out. Honestly, the aviary in Treetops Way might be the real low-key night. Never mind. Never mind. The next stop is Hippo Trail. Absolutely where this happened. That's absolutely where this happened.
And those hippos.
Oh God. This
they
just
were
gets...
waiting.
Okay, hippo is bad, and we all agree that hippos are the animals that you want to fight. But here are... They shouldn't have put the gondolas here. It was real dumb of them to build this zoo so close to a military base and then have the gondolas fly over in order. The hippo habitat, either alligators or crocodiles, I can't tell from the photo, the monkeys, indeed, and something called Tiger Trail. Then Reptile House before landing. It's just I believe the Marines would call this a target-rich environment.
You know, though,
the
Marines got stranded over the pandas, and they're like, "Yeah, we can kick those ass, like those like animals' ass. That's fine. Pandas are nothing." But you know that like some little kid got stuck over the hippos, right? And they're next to the Marines, and they're like, "Hey, can you guys fight the hippos?" They're like, "No, you're dead if you go down there, bro. Hippos are savage."
The one animal they respect, yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Make me feel better and comfort me. No, bro, that hippo will kill you. We might all be dead. Well, just you mainly. We'll be fine. We got the pandas. This is our opportunity, by the way, to conduct a little bit of not just business, but podcast business. Podcast business? What's the business? podcast business. It's a business with the podcast, and it's got a gun. Oh my God, it's a panda with a gun. He's chasing a Marine, and he's far more dangerous than we thought he was.
Toppling pile of notebooks.
Thank you, Betty. That's right. Podcast business this week. Hey, Holly.
Hey, Spencer.
What were you doing in Daytona? Where's that going to be? What's happening?
I already said that part. It's going to be a story in Road and Track magazine. Betty, God damn it. It's going to be a story in Road and Track magazine, available where finer magazines are sold. They go to press in like 5 days, so I got to finish this story pretty quickly. And there's going to be a little notebook emptying session about it, including more talk about the personal vehicles and the different types of smoke we encountered on Channel 6, which is our little subscription newsletter situation, over to Pastor Jason, who has some fairly new content of his own to share.
Well, on the Vacation Bible School podcast, we have made our way to the book of Joshua, which is the book that has war stuff that is, how do I tease it without ruining it? Fake. Let's just say that. It's all bullshit. Book of Joshua is bullshit. It's the first book in the Bible that I'm like, no, this is fake. This is a lie. I will bend over backward to defend and believe pretty much anything in it except for this. Book of Joshua. Wall of Jericho. It's all bullshit. But tune in as I work to convince you of all these things, and Emily as well. It's a good podcast. Those of you who have not checked it out yet, there is no, I'm not going to do a like guilt and shame type joke there, because like that's what you get in real church. We don't do that here. You should listen because it's good. That's all.
It's a great podcast.
Jane has been on.
Yeah, Jane, I know another good podcast. Maybe you know the same one.
It's called The Argument. It's from the New York Times. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's cool if you haven't, you know, whatever. It's very niche.
I think it's sweet of you to lend your voice to classing up the New York Times.
Finally. That lady, she needed it. I host a podcast. It's called The Argument. You should subscribe. I am slowly working in more sports references and just increasingly, like, you know, a little onschlussing of sports into The Argument, which is challenging to do, but, you know, like invading Czechoslovakia. When you can, why don't you?
I just hear you triumphing over adversity and being rewarded.
I would also highly recommend Jane's newsletter.
Yes.
Which you can sign up for, where, yes, you do a noble job working sports into it. I have appeared in said newsletter along with many other experts. Paul Feinbaum just stops by, because that's how Jane's got it. Paul Feinbaum stops by to kneel at the altar.
Jane doesn't break him over her knee because she's merciful.
That's right.
He was a delightful guest who kept reiterating how he has said nice things about Michigan, and I was like, congratulations to you. Good job. You okay?
Sounds like Paul's scared.
Well, the only time I've ever met Paul Feinbaum in person, it was outside the Popeyes in Atlanta's airport, which I think is like where you would run into him by law.
Wait, which one? Was Terminal B?
Yeah, Terminal B.
Ooh, that's the Abandon All Hope Popeyes. That's the Bo Bice Popeyes, isn't it?
No. His was at the gates.
Okay.
Yeah.
All I know is I was extremely happy to see that Popeyes. What I don't care. My hope was not abandoned. But yeah, so I saw him in person, and it was interesting because it was like Paul Feinbaum might be. I often think that there's like this weird bell curve of celebrity where at a certain point you're like too famous for your own good and you can't interact with any humans. And weirdly, I think Paul Feinbaum might be edging, like, he's super, super famous, but he's not famous enough for him to like stay away from the people. So he has people coming up to him all damn day, and like no one's trying to stop you or get in your way, and he handles all of it. And I'm like, you know, like there are people who are correspondingly as famous in their field as he is, and they have like 15 bodyguards. But Paul Feinbaum's just wearing a slightly too baggy suit, being nice as heck.
Yeah, he's also dude famous, which I find is a very, very particular and unmanageable kind of famous. Because a lot of times dudes will just think we're hanging out. They'll just say, oh, well, I've met you. Now we're hanging out.
You get this a lot.
Yeah. And at one point you have to say, I have to go into this bathroom and into a stall by myself.
I'm like, oh, cool. We pooping?
Yeah. They're like, cool, bro. I could be next to you. Do you need a hand? We can get through this. Yeah, it's a I watched one time. I've watched Scott Van Pelt at the Masters walk around as a civilian. So behind the not behind the ropes, like out on
and
the fairway.
Can't do it
you can't do it. You cannot because there are so many guys in quarter zips who want to come up and say, "Oh, Scott, listen, I just respect what you've done for this sport, and you're such a consummate professional." Mm-hmm. Like it's being dude
it's
famous
that voice
is.
Too. I once met, this is a different profession, but I once met Chris Hayes, and someone came up to him, and it's that exact voice, like, "Hey, Chris, just really want to say I appreciate your show, and I really really think that what you're doing is..." And then they had this whole, like, meeting of bros, and I was like, what is happening right now?
It's
that glory to God post-game voice.
Yeah.
It is very weird. They will talk to you if you get the particularly respectful guy, which I don't get, which I'm very happy, right? Like, most people come up to me and they're like, "Sup, asshole?" You're like, "Hey." Like, I'm
Spencer,
used to that,
so
right?
So you don't get the, like, your tweets changed my life and, like, that kind of thing?
No. No, I get like, "Dude, you look even more disheveled in person than you do on TV." Like, that's what I get.
When you said the entire state of Ohio was sweatshirt fascism, I felt that.
Yeah, bro. No, I don't get the lowered voice very often. I usually get dudes who are like, "Hey, what's going on? You know, do you want a mop?" You know, like that's really...
Do you want
a mop, right? Okay. Like looking over at the mop on the wall and just handing it to you, being like, "Hey, something weird." Like, I get the weird,
okay,
which is a really great kind of famous, actually. Like,
mop
my
guy.
Little internet mop. Yeah, to be the person that gets offered random objects, right?
Oh, I thought you meant they were asking you to join the custodial staff.
That might be the case as well.
Okay.
You know, and I'm listening, frankly. I am my current podcast business. You can find me over at Channel 6. I might be doing Debatable on Thursday if y'all want to.
Debatable.
That's an online show for ESPN with Pablo Torre and company. I might be a talking head on there on Thursday. I think we managed to work that out. So I might be on there Thursday. And you can find me on this, the internet's foremost steak brawl podcast, the Shutdown Fullcast.
Tune in to the Shutdown Fullcast, folks, to find Spencer Hall.
Oh, shit. Y'all, there's another news story.
Oh, did we forget one?
Another fugitive Crystal Cruises ship flees to the Bahamas with 400 passengers aboard to avoid seizure in Miami after parent company goes bankrupt and fails to pay for millions in fuel. The parent company is the same company trying to sell Miami-Dade a $770 million monorail.
This is the greatest company in the world.
This is wonderful. Ah. Anyway.
This is a second boat under arrest or whatever?
This is the second. I don't know if they've arrested the first one, but a second one has now, like, turned away from Miami and made a run for the Bahamas with 400 people on board who just wanted to go home.
So the first boat is now a ringleader.
Yeah.
Or the first boat was gunned down by police in Miami-Dade.
Hang on.
And the second boat is coming to avenge
arrest.
It?
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly the plot, Jason. The boat's, yeah, bring it hell with me. God, it would be terrifying to be pursued by a cruise ship.
I do not see the... Okay, the most recent version of this story says a cruise ship is trying to evade U.S. arrest at sea. Buddy, aren't we all?
Yeah, same.
Oh, goals. Boat goals.
I'm just trying to evade arrest on the big sea of life.
Truer words.
I just feel as if I feel like being pursued by a cruise ship would be like being pursued by like a giant Imperial Star Destroyer. In that, like, yes, it's very scary, but I feel like this entire chase must be taking place very slowly.
Yeah, all you have to do is turn 90 degrees.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I saw enough of speed too. I think I could handle this.
The cruise ship chase is the Last Jedi chase, where the two ships are like 8 feet apart, shouting at each other.
We brought up Justified in the last in our last discussion of Crystal Cruises, because Raylan is based in Miami and there's a U.S. Marshal apparently stationed at the docks ready to arrest this boat the second it comes in. But do you remember in, I think, season 2, the incredibly slow speed foot chase between the elderly senior U.S. Marshal Art and an elderly criminal who is dragging an oxygen tank? And Art can't walk. So they're just kind of like shuffling after each other, carrying guns. like that level yeah. of mobility. Spencer has gone to feed the dog because she will give us no peace.
Yeah, both of the puppies. So we have a box that was underneath the couch that contained other boxes for reasons. And the puppies attacked it with such vigor that they tired themselves out. And that's why when you have puppies or dogs, or I assume like very small children up to a certain point, you just be like, you just got to keep like falling back. It's just like, you know, you can have these fields and burn down these barns. And at a certain point, you'll get tired and fall asleep.
Right, right. They found their Waterloo under the couch.
Yeah. Yeah, they're good. Love they'll be dead asleep for like the next hour. I'm just really hoping though that like I've been trying, their circadian rhythms are like generally they can sleep through the night. It's just at 6 o'clock in the morning they experience a crisis of the self, and they really want someone to come look at them. You don't really need to pet them or anything. They just want to be looked at, just to make sure that they still exist.
Yeah, confirm I am still.
Yeah. Oh. Sure.
Been there.
I get that.
One ping, please.
Jane, what manner of puppies are these?
They are lab mixes, and we think they might be lab husky mixes because they have heterochromia, so they have different color eyes, which is they are extremely cute. They are also small animals with a digestive tract that is 6 inches long. They are very small. They were brought up from Mississippi, where they were rescued from an extremely bad situation that fortunately they have no memory of. And they are going to two delightful homes in a couple of weeks. But for right now, they are sleeping. And they sleep in such a way that's like, it's like they worked all night in the like picking stuff up and putting stuff down factory or something. And now they're sleeping like the sleep of like when they sleep, it is like the most restful looking sleep you could possibly imagine. Like, oh man, they must have worked so hard doing nothing.
Got a lot done.
Yeah. They accomplished all their goals.
We are here today to discuss, again, the aforementioned mystery as to how
45 minutes later
Cincinnati managed to become the center of the football universe in the year 2022, first with the regular season and conference championship winning Cincinnati Bearcats taking college football by storm by making the playoff, and don't worry about what happened after that. And then with the Cincinnati Bengals following this up by not only winning a road playoff game for the first time in the history of the franchise, but defeating the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC Championship game to become Super Bowl participants.
I hate it when our sons fight.
How?
But I'm proud
Jane,
of both of them.
This is so against everything that you have to know about the world.
It is unmooring. It actually has gotten to the point that like I have seen Bengals Super Bowl merchandise, and it is like it's wrong. It's like if you see in other countries where they have sent the, like, Falcons won the Super Bowl t-shirts that were definitely made. And it's like, oh, like, that's a thing that didn't actually happen. Ha ha. No. No, this is all real. Joey Burrow has brought the Cincinnati Bengals to the Super Bowl while proceeding to just give no fucks whatsoever the whole time. Not once. Not once at all. Not in any way. Does he care at all? And now, like, it is unmooring. And it's interesting to see people try to treat it as, like, oh, it's this interesting thing. Because, like, you know, they made this big turnaround. They were 2-14, like, the season or two ago. And, wow. And I'm like, no. Like, it's like if Burkina Faso becomes, like, the number two economy on Earth. Like, this is, like, people are somehow I keep – I have many beloved NFL writer friends, and they are great, and they keep trying to put this in terms that are like, oh, this is a normal thing, turnaround, draft. I'm like, no. Mm-hmm. No, this is beyond the nature of space and time. It is above the concept of natural occurrence. I don't know what's going on here. I'm afraid of it. I'm afraid of it. Like, I watched the end of the game on Sunday in a Whole Foods because when the Bengals got down 21-3, I was like, okay, nature has taken its course. I see what's happening.
I was worried about you until I heard you had taken a walk.
Oh, yeah. I took a 2-hour-long walk, and it was very cold because I was listening to a podcast about classic Hollywood.
Elite dad move, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you got
to take a walk for feelings.
It really helps. I didn't have any, like, there's no chores I could have been doing, so I just took a long walk. And then I checked in on Twitter in the second half, and I was like, oh, it's like, okay, it's like 21-10. I'm like, okay, that's like, you know, you got to make it respectable. And then it was like 21-17. And then the game was somehow tied. And I was like, oh, this is going to be even worse when the Bengals lose. And then the Chiefs get the ball back first in overtime. And I'm like, oh, here we go. And then there's an interception. And not just an interception, like a normal, like, bloop. It was like an interception, like a deflected interception. And then the Bengals kicked a field goal and won the game. And I just was like, I'm sorry, what? Like, it would be like if the Marines had fallen into the hippo area and then they became friends with the hippo and decided to live in the hippo enclosure. And they were just like, no, we are of the hippos now. It's like,
I love you, bro.
Yeah.
I love you too,
like,
hippo.
It had that level of probability.
Okay, so we're going to do a real quick Georgia segment called How's Your Tahoe? Michael, how is your Chevy Tahoe?
Chevy Tahoe's doing real, real good. I've been looking at them aftermarket taillights, but have not decided yet. I did get my Georgia Bulldogs 2022 National Champions magnet for the back of it, though. So it's going to pop.
Good.
It's going to pop going down.
That's going to pop real good. That's going to pop real good.
Mm-hmm. Jason, how's your Tahoe?
My Tahoe is spectacular. It's just sitting. It's just sitting out there. We hadn't needed it because we'd been taking the daily driver, the Hummer. So the Tahoe's just been resting because everyone needs to rest a little bit. You know, I'm from Georgia. We work real hard, really hard as Georgians.
And sleep hard on ice bags.
And so do our Tahoes.
Spencer Hall, how's the Tahoe?
Yeah, my Tahoe's good. You'll notice, by the way, my Tahoe featured in, I'm real optimistic about its longevity because my Tahoe was featured in the preview for the Halo movie that Paramount's doing on streaming. There is, in one of the back of the fight scenes, a 552-year-old Tahoe, and it looks like it just, you know, looks like brand new. Additionally, my dog puked in the Tahoe this week, so I got to say, I'm going to take a point down. We're down a point. We got to clean it up, do a little carpet shampooing. But otherwise, I think it's going to be good enough to make it till Master Chief times.
Folks, you know who can't answer the question, how's your Tahoe?
Who's that?
Marjorie Taylor Greene, who appears via Roger Sullenberger reporting to have bought a $93,000 Buick or GMC campaign vehicle. Now, I'm not a mathematician, but neither of those looks like a Tahoe. There are no Buicks in that range, also. So congratulations, first of all, to buying a big dumb truck with donor money, which I believe is a dream we all aspire to. But gotta see that Tahoe, babes. And now I'm going to return to a question for Jane Coaston, because when we said when we had a mystery Bengals guest on today's show, I'm guessing by the tenor of these questions, everybody believes that this is going to be Jane, because the very first question is, what military leader most resembles the Bengals over time?
Oh, my God. Well, it needs to be someone who is trash. Okay, who was good and then trash for so long that you forgot that they were good, except in lore. And then has suddenly made a massive turnaround. I feel as if, like, I don't know. Is this kind of the Ulysses S. Grant story of somebody who is just,
maybe,
like, just sad and pathetic and then somehow made it, like, you know, by being wily and angry somewhere out in the West, which in the Civil War, the West is, like, Tennessee. Maybe are they the which also then makes me think that their presidency is going to be disappointing for me. But that's neither here nor there.
It's like, yeah, that drunkard is president now. That's kind of the Bengals are in the Super Bowl.
Yep. Yeah. The drunkard that we all kind of like, everyone's sort of confused at. But damn it, if that drunkard wasn't wily.
Jane, can I go ahead and suggest that maybe he's Rokossovsky? That would be the guy who is taken away to prison, has all of his teeth pulled out, is tortured, beaten, left for dead, then called back at the last minute, absolutely kicks ass when you need it at the like last possible second.
Also, this then again means that he will then be betrayed again during the Polish October of 1956. Also, there's a whole thing
you
about
see the grand plan here.
I don't feel good about where this ends for the Bengals. I also will note that with Rokossovsky, that there's the story that he had his teeth pulled out, but there is a story that he also had metal teeth put in, and that
yes.
you can see it in photographs, but because there was like a glint or something, it is
biohacking.
Unclear. It's unclear whether or not that was true, but as I remember, there were a lot of people who were like, well, I mean, it does seem like something that would have happened, which that's the real issue with that kind of like Soviet purge era, like from like 1934 to 1947. And then even after that to Stalin's death, is that there's a lot of stuff where you're like, well, probably like
this is the rare intersection of Soviet generals and New Orleans rappers.
Yeah, I was just going to say, anytime you tell me a Soviet general did something that like a 2000s-ish rapper would do, I'm like, yeah, that happened.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a, the great part. Like when you're just like, oh, we just have to murder all of the generals, all of the most experienced people, and then we're going to go to war. Yeah, this is going to go fine. I'm sure it's fine.
I heard Polish October, and I was like, a lot of folding tables lost during Polish October.
Go Bills.
It's
hey,
Betty.
Hey. Come here.
The
dog dominance on all sides today. What are you doing?
This is actually, I think this is a unique overlay of your interest, Jane. This is from John Smack 220. Your airport is in Kentucky. How excited are you for us to annex you as well as if you are successful?
That'll be cool. Because the nice thing about that airport is that there's another airport, and it's in Dayton. But if you fly into Cincinnati and you tell people to come meet you at the Dayton airport, everyone gets really confused for understandable reasons, because there's just CVG. Also, when you drive up from CVG to Cincinnati, you come around this curve and you see the whole city, and it's very beautiful. And you're like, oh, this seems like a nice place to be. And if you're me when you're 15, you're like, that's a lie. One of the funny things about Cincinnati is that I grew up there. My parents are there. My whole family is there. And it's an interesting place because I both very much enjoy it, but I am still getting to know it as an adult, because I was going to joke earlier that my thought is that we are actually in a simulation. And there's a famous quote Mark Twain gave about how when the world ended, he wanted to be in Cincinnati because then he'd have 10 more years. And then I looked back and I was like, well, what was the Super Bowl and the college national championship 10 years ago? 10 years ago, Alabama beats LSU in an extremely boring title game. I believe that was that was after the 9-6 game. That was the 21-0 national championship game.
That was the first title game I ever went to. It was a Sugar Bowl that year.
And the Super Bowl was the Giants beating the Patriots the second time with that Mario Manningham sideline catch. And so I'm like, oh, so it's like all of this is supposed, like Cincinnati was supposed to make it to a hypothetical playoff adjacent thing in 2012. And then the Bengals were supposed to do all of this in 2012, but they just didn't because, we were late. But now we're on time. It's just now that's why it feels so weird. We're just like 10 years off of whatever was supposed to happen.
As the prophet foretold in that case.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But Cincinnati is also like, you'll note that there are a lot of people who now live in Cincinnati and they're like, it's a super cool place to be. But if you live there as a teenager in the early 2000s, you probably don't live there anymore. And now people are like, yeah, it's fun. And I'm like, is it? Tell me more about this fun
place. I think it's when you come back as an adult and your interests are far more prosaic and you have maybe far less hope for the world. Now, neat cities to me are places where you go, oh, I could buy a house for less than $1 million, and the water only has so much feces in it. Those, like, my expectations for a city are so much lower than they used to be.
Well, it just is like, you know, now it's interesting now when I go back, because it's people are like, oh, like, there's this cool bar, and I'm like, I don't know anything about a bar, but if you needed to find a smoothie in 2004, I could tell you all about how to do that. You know, I could tell you the closest Panera to my Catholic high school in Blue Ash. I could tell you that the high schools that weren't my Catholic high school were dens of iniquity, because they were. And everybody knew it. And yeah, no, it's real weird, because it's sort of like, it's like if you moved away from, like, the country of your birth. There's J. Caspian Kang, he wrote this book about Asian American identity, and he talks a lot about how his parents, they moved from South Korea and then moved back like 20 years later. And obviously South Korea, like, a lot had happened in 20 years since, like, you know, the end of a military dictatorship and all this other stuff happened. But his parents were like, whoop, we're like trying to go back the way it was when we left. And everyone in South Korea was like, what's wrong with you? And that's what it feels. It's like I moved away from the country of Cincinnati, and the country of Cincinnati was like, cool, bye. And they, like, moved along and everybody did stuff. And then I go back and I'm like, what do you mean you changed something since 2005?
That's where I left it. Why'd you move it?
He was like, no. This is where the United Dairy Farmers is. That's where it is, and you can't move it.
I wonder if there's this thing where, like, everyone grows up, and if you don't live in a city that they make lots of movies about, you think, where I'm from is lame and bad. And then you move around the world a little bit, and you realize, like, every town is, like, 90-something percent the same. I guess my town was fine, mostly.
Yeah, it's and I think that was the thing, though, is that, like, I thought that, like, New York seemed like, there were, like, imaginary cities to me growing up, like New York, Tokyo, London, like, those aren't real places, those are movies. But then there was, like, Chicago's real, and, like, this big
Chicago's
place.
Chicago's a TV movie.
Yeah, it's like, it's an accessible TV movie. It's like happy endings. It's like a good show that's going to get canceled too early.
Unfortunately, that has not happened for the Bears.
No. Well, I appreciate that their coaching search really appeared to, and I'm aware that this could have been a joke, but I can't tell if it was. But it appeared that their very, 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 very elderly owner just didn't want to learn any more names. So just went, was like, get me another Matt. And I'm like, I respect that, Virginia. You're 99. Who, like, I would never try to tell a 99-year-old woman what to do. Never.
Hi, you're okay. You're okay.
So, Holly, you're okay with Knoxville now. You're like, okay, it's like cooler.
What?
You think?
No. Where did you... No.
No?
I don't ever go back there if I can help it.
Yeah.
Also, I try not to mention this on this... I had a terrible time in Knoxville. I was caught between... If you went to Knoxville in the early... At the turn of the century when I went to Tennessee, we were kind of caught between two big economic downturns for Knoxville, and in a period of time where there was just nothing there. Like, there wasn't a movie theater anywhere within, like, reasonable walking or public transportation use. There was not even a grocery store on campus, really. And I go back to my actual hometown quite frequently, which I love because it is mostly woods and it is outside of Knoxville. And I don't really venture into Knoxville that much, but whenever I'm forced to, I'm like, I get mad. I get mad that the kids are in school here. I'm like, y'all have stuff now, and you don't understand how lucky you are. You have stuff. We had to drive to goddamn Bearden to go to Kroger. Anyway, I'm over it, really.
Yeah, because I grew up, like, the big city for me was Nashville, and you would go, oh, if you came back, like, 20 years later, you would think it was, like, you know, you'd go, oh, I see the upsides, and no, I don't.
Oh, see, when I was growing up, like, the big city was Atlanta. Like, uh-oh, this is where we would come shopping for prom dresses to feel extra fancy, right?
Yeah. Nashville's only gotten worse.
And now I live here, and I'm like, oh, God, I hate it here. So I don't know. I'm not on any reasonable time track except just being cranky about wherever I am.
Nashville is now trapped. Nashville's now trapped in like bachelorette hell, which is funny as hell to
very
me. That they were like, they're like, we want nightlife. Oh, do you? Oh, do you? Be careful what you wish for. Welcome to hell.
Yeah, at least Cincinnati just went with like, why don't we just put a lot of breweries in a place? And then it turns out that works out great. Yeah, it just is like, when you just really lean in hard to alcohol, yeah, sure, there are going to be unintended consequences, like your little bikey bachelorette-y things that people do in
places. And then, like,
places.
Craft beer people think that it's okay to be themselves.
And you wind up going to, like, beer festivals, and then there's a wine tent, and you're like, oh, thank God. Woo! Big relief.
Yes.
But it appears to have, it's interesting though, because one of the other things about Cincinnati is that it's big enough that like stuff has happened, but small enough that like even local politics, there's kind of like a rotating cast of characters, like the current, let's double check so that I am not, oh wow. Well, the current mayor of Cincinnati, it is like this. Okay, see, this is another thing. Like, John Cranley was mayor in my head for, like, 90,000 years. But now the mayor of the city of Cincinnati is a cool person named Aftab Purival. And I'm like, wait, I'm sorry, the what now? We have a person who is not, like, he was born in 1982. He is from Xenia. His mother is a refugee from Tibet. He went to Ohio State, but, you know, whatever.
That's okay.
Look, it happens.
So
it
did,
happens like, in the best of families.
So did Von Bell. So
I mean, this all happens. Let's see. He extended support for mobile devices for the Clerk of Courts website, which for Cincinnati is like, whoa.
Ooh.
Whoa.
Slow down.
Woo! If you could get your court date information on your phone, that's just nonsense. See,
Slow down, Cincy.
It's a place that has continued to change, and then I'm like, no, I put you here. You can't move over there. But I do appreciate that while Cincinnati might change, my parents are still there, and they're still like, we went for a bike ride today. It was great. My dad saw the hawk again. There's a hawk that lives in the neighborhood.
Yeah. The Cincinnati hawk.
Yeah, he likes to keep an eye on the hawk. Just see what's happening. All the pictures he's taken of the hawk on his cell phone are slightly blurry, so it's kind of like, is it a hawk?
Perfect.
Or is it a... Yeah. It's the perfect way to do hawk photography, as you know. You don't want to be able to see the hawk too well.
It's like a horror movie. You don't want to be able to see the monster. It ruins everything. Has your dad gotten into, like, mapping the hawk's whereabouts or charting the hawk or anything like that?
As far as I know, not, because my dad's very busy with, they have chickens, because of course they do. They have ground hawks. Yeah, they have ground hawks. And my dad gets really into, you know, woodworking projects and reading new books from the library about the Second World War, because he hasn't finished all of them. And
they keep making them.
It's really, you'd think at a certain point, but it turns out it's a vein you can just keep on tapping. So yeah, it's nice, because like my parents, the level of stasis in the Coaston household, great. Like things, like if they got a new couch, I think I would need to like, I need to take another 2-hour long walk. I don't know if I could really come back from that. But no, Cincinnati is a place I keep trying to pin down, and then it moves a little bit, and I'm like, can't do that. Not allowed.
Stop wiggling, Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Well, Cincinnati's upgrades, they include things like Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
That's
a
pretty good one. Jane, were you, when the last time the Bengals went to the Super Bowl, were you like two? Something like that?
They played in 1989. So yeah, I was two. The quarterback, it's funny because they YouTube recommended their playoff, their AFC championship game to me from that year. So it was against the Bills, And Boomer Esiason was quarterback for the Bengals, which is funny to me now that he has, in my head, he has been a commentator far long, like in my imagination, he's been a commentator my entire life. And it is weird to me to see him actually playing the sport that is why he is paid to comment on things. Which is kind of why I think that if you are a commentator on sports, that maybe there's like an expiration date for it. Just as like, have you been a commentator for longer than you played the sport at a high level?
You're out of player.
So for every year you play, you get to put a rock in a pile, and for every year you commentate, you have to take a rock out, and then you're done.
Yes. Yep. Yep. I think that sounds great.
Did you see the halftime show, by the way, the CBS halftime show?
I heard it.
We were tagged many times in this news event as well.
Why was everybody tagging us in this show?
Because for 7 minutes, the CBS halftime show, a confusing affair already with at least seven jocks lined up on a desk like some sort of insane blocky review board.
Like a
man
council
beef, right?
Of elders in a space movie.
Yeah. In like very blocky double-breasted suits, all of them sitting there were drowned out by a loudspeaker for the halftime show mounted immediately next to the set. And yet,
and, Spencer,
tried...
what was the halftime show?
What tune was it?
What was it?
We finally figured out who this person was because we were trying to figure it out on a previous show.
What was the halftime show?
It was the fucking Applebee's song.
Oh, yeah.
The Applebee's song that we bullied off of the college football airwaves, not just
that
us, the collective,
we were making too
the collective
big of a
deal college
about.
Football internet bullied this song off of college football broadcast in October. And lo and behold, like a fucking shitty Phoenix, here it is in January in Kansas City, drowning out Boomer Esiason and Bill Cowher and co. And the Chiefs were up 21-10 at the time, and then they lost. What's that tell you?
At the time, I believe Boomer Esiason, there's a clip of him going, "I didn't hear anything you just said, so I'm going to say my thing." And I was like, thank you for finally saying it out loud. None of you are listening to each other at all.
I'm just pasting my statement.
Hall of Famer Bill Cowher sitting there getting drowned out by the fucking Applebee's song. But I need to hear him say whoever runs the ball will control the line of scrimmage. I need it.
I'm going to offer a dissent here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure I will regret this the second I have more information about this. But do you know who I have not heard a fucking word about or from outside of this television program since he retired from football? Bill Cowher.
I was thinking about that. Like, it's interesting to me because, one, he's younger than you think he is.
Uh-huh.
Like, whatever age you think he is, he's younger than that. Because I did not realize that he retired, like, early, which is weird for the NFL because it feels like people hold on for, like, a really long time. And he is, let's see, let me do
64. He's 64.
Yeah, which
and
means
as soon as he retired, he was NC State's Jack Del Rio, right? Like every year it was like, NC State's going to land Cowher.
And I don't know if he has.
He retired at 49.
God, like, see, that's how, maybe he can replace Gene Chizik since Gene has backslid in our knows how to live and how to stay out of everybody's business. Pedestal, and he may be a shitty person to work with or have shitty opinions, but I'm just saying I'm not aware of them, and I appreciate that about Bill Cowher.
Yeah, he just like I just like that he just like I don't want to coach, I don't want to do anything. The only mm-hmm. reason that there were rumors about me coaching is because they sold their house and then built a new one 2 miles away, which I appreciate. Mm-hmm. Also, I have learned that. So Boomer Esiason played for the Bengals from 1984 until 1992. Then he went to the Jets for 3 years, which is like you do.
Grim.
It's interesting because he, they went. Bruce Coslett was, oh, God. Wow.
Oh,
just
no.
Yeah, that's and grim. Bruce Coslett, he just like followed, I guess Bruce Coslett just followed him back. But anyway, so then he plays at Arizona for 1 year in 96, and then he comes back to Cincinnati in 1997. And I have learned from Wikipedia that So the Bengals were very Bengally that year. They won their first game of the season and then lost the next seven. And Jeff Blake, who was the starter, lost the starting quarterback job because that's what the Bengals will do to you. Also, I did not realize that Jeff Blake finished sixth in the 1991 Heisman Trophy voting because he was at East Carolina and had just really obscene numbers.
He tore Miami up one night, like on a Thursday. It was great.
So then Boomer Esiason comes back and they win six out of their final eight. And the Bengals were about to give him the job full time. And then he got an offer from ABC to do Monday Night Football. And he was like, because he would make more money doing commentating than playing football. He retired. That's it. And I'm like, sounds about right. I think that's the other thing is that, like, as I recall, the Bengals still do not have a indoor practice facility. And I just checked.
What?
That's why they're so tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been a lot of stuff. Let's see. There's an article from April of 2021. Another change the team much seriously considers, an indoor practice facility. Cincinnati remains the northernmost city with an NFL franchise to have not have a practice facility. However, on the Bengals Reddit channel, there is fact. Guess who hasn't had a COVID outbreak playing in the fresh air? We've been playing 4D chess for years.
They should try playing football.
Yeah,
they didn't have an indoor practice facility is because you want to keep the stench outdoors and let it air out generally. Like
yeah,
the Bengals franchise,
over an
you don't. Yeah,
area.
You don't want to put a lid on that.
Yeah, and also because they are. Let's see. An agent described Mike Brown, the owner of the team, who in my head is 3,000 years old. He is 86, around the same. Agent described him as being a Don Quixote type, pushing back against the forces of salary madness. But also, he just didn't pay for anyone to do anything. He was supposed to sign Warren Sapp in 2004. And
we have a question.
Mm-hmm.
No, let Jane keep going. That's why I raised my hand.
I'm saying,
unobtrusive.
He is one of the cheapest people in the history of time, and he's why they probably don't have a. I am the people who are mad at Mike Brown Wikipedia section is lengthy. Corey Dillon, Takiyo Spikes, Carl Pickens. Apparently he would deny, like, you had to be nice to the Bengals. They instituted a loyalty clause, which means that they wouldn't pay you if you were mean to the Bengals. Now, let's keep in mind, the 2000 Bengals were, let's check.
Which school
four
is going to be the first to do that?
4-12. Yeah. So you had to be nice or else they wouldn't give you money. But yeah, he's very cheap. What was your question? I got distracted.
What happened to Don Quixote? Just asking questions, folks.
He went to the Super Bowl.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. TJ Houshmandzadeh, by the way, once said that the Browns or the Bengals, the Browns, the owners, the Bengals management and were so cheap that they handed out used jock straps.
No.
Yeah. In addition to that, most teams on a game will have the whole team together in a hotel, and they didn't do that for the Bengals. So Houshmandzadeh thought he was inactive, so he went out on like Saturday night real hard. And then they're like, "Hey, bro, you coming in tomorrow for the game?" And he had to suit up after being at the club all night on Sunday. Go Bengals, Jane. I have a question. Bengals. Would you pronounce that, please?
Bengals. Bengals.
Okay,
not
she
Bengals.
Does it too. Okay, that's the
do,
question.
No.
Okay,
do I do the Bengals thing? Oh, no.
A little bit?
A little bit.
No, there was like a shade of it because I had never heard this before. Spencer brought it up, and now I hear it everywhere.
People say this?
Apparently.
Yeah.
Spencer, this is your theory. Go ahead.
Yeah, that if you listen and once you hear it, about half of all Americans say Bengals.
Yeah.
Like people from not just like you figure that Southerners would be the ones who would go ahead and, you know, pull the e-brake and start sliding around the syllables a little bit and really sort of putting a drift on the pronunciation. But no, if you listen, like a lot of the like primarily mid-Atlantic and Northeastern NFL media crew, like people from Long Island are like the Bengals. Like they say. B-A, and once you hear it, you won't unhear it. A lot of them, because it should be, like if you're real stick-up-your-ass stickler for this, Bengals. That's, right?
Bengal, yeah.
That's, yeah. But the two mispronunciations that I absolutely love, Bengal is my favorite, because people just love saying the word, apparently just smack right into it. The other one is Bing, like, Bingle. Like, that's very much the, like...
Bingle.
Bingle. Yeah, like Boomer Esiason says it like that. The Bengals.
Yeah,
that one's fun.
But half of all Americans say Bengals, like it from like California, New York.
No, and it's
south.
Like it's like the Yugoslavian Civil War. There's no geographic divide. It is house to house fighting over this pronunciation.
Yeah, Mel Kiper has a great B E N G A L S with his extremely Baltimore accent. Bengals. Thank you for helping me. Shed some light.
See, this
on
is
that
one of those
one.
Moments in which I think that I have a very like flat Midwestern accent of any kind, and now I'm just gonna be saying bangle, bangle, bingle, bingle. Yeah, bangle. It's like you kind of unintentionally have to start saying bingle, like B-I-N-G-L-E, which is not a word.
It's like you're making a giant sweeping turn with a boat, right? Because you can't, if you turn it too sharply, you're just going to slide off.
Yeah. Yeah. You got
to. But you almost have to overcorrect to get to where you want to go.
Mm-hmm. You know, kind of steer into the skid. Is that it? Something.
I had another question for you. You get three Bengals to take with you for the Super Bowl to celebrate, who played on really shitty teams but were heroes. I suspect I already know who one of them is. But who's coming along and getting partial credit for this one?
Three. Peter Warwick. Chad Ochocinco. I hope he's going anyway. I hope the team is bringing him, and two, I just hope that he's just like, I was already there. Like,
I hope Chad goes in uniform.
And TJ, obviously. Like, they put up with the death of a teammate. They put up with just like abject nonsense right and left. I hope that like somewhere Carson Palmer is enjoying quiet puttering around by himself time and thinking like, that's nice for them. Cause like, there was a story that like Chad would just start showing up at Carson Palmer's house on random weekdays being like, let's hang out. And Carson would be like, no, I'd rather.
That's unexpectedly poignant.
No, it's,
I mean, I imagine Chad's a lot.
Oh, yeah. And now I think that he was a lot then, and he's just like, he just seems like he's kind of aged into himself. He just had a baby girl with apparently the star of Selling Tampa. Yeah, this all checks out. And he celebrated by getting cigars, Krispy Kreme donuts, and a tall caramel macchiato. Like,
dad. What a transition into elder statesmanhood for him.
He seems to be having just a really nice time. He said that he believed in the team. Beforehand. And I just like that. And I think TJ Houshman's not like, there was this really pleasant era of the Bengals in like 2003 to 2008 in which they were like feisty. And I never really thought that they would just be good, but I thought like feisty is fun. There's like
Pac-Man Jones.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like like mildly problematic, but fun, which is something like, you know, kind of like, oh, like, you know, if these things break right, this team is fun. Like there was a year in 2004 where the Chiefs were undefeated, and then they came to Cincinnati at like 9-0, and Peter Warwick like caught a ball. No, it was a kickoff return, and he ran it back while dragging someone half the distance. And I was like, yes, I'm into this. I'm into everything. I subscribe to this newsletter, and like, you know, each time they would attempt to go to a playoff game, something terrible would happen. I believe that the 2015-2016 wild card game against the Steelers has been detailed in a past episode. I watched that game in Auckland, New Zealand on my phone at Ponsonby Central, where Spencer, I believe, has been. Mm-hmm. And I remember standing there at like 11 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday and thinking, I'm too good for this. I'm done. I'm out. And there's nothing. It was nice because you were so separated from it. Like when you're in another, like especially a time zone that different, like it didn't even feel real. Like there were pictures of it being cold and I was like, what's happening? Because it was not cold in Auckland and it was just like a different time and a different day, and I was like, I'm done, I'm out. And then I've been like, you know, I don't want to come back to this, nothing good happens. And then Joey Burrow came and I was like, all right, see, because the nice thing is that they have kept the fun and feisty part without the players who have gotten arrested slash players who have done bad things slash losing in part because of the feistiness. Because let's keep in mind that the losing because of the feistiness was bad. Like, I wrote a whole piece for The Ringer about Vontaze Burfict because I thought there was a period where he really, like, spelled out what the NFL was, which is, like, he does this thing. He's really good at the thing. You don't want him to do the thing. Like, the man threatened to kill Matt Barkley in high school and then just was like, you know what? I'm going to double down in college. And like, mm-hmm. he would have moments of being like, I caused a 15-yard penalty. I got the game-winning fumble. Like, that's what you were going to. And then it turns out that like that balance is really hard to keep and he could not. And here we are now. But yeah, now the Bengals appear to have managed to merge feisty and good. And that's very confusing.
I was going to suggest that it doesn't really matter whether we put Burfict on that list or not. If he wants to, he will be there.
Oh, yeah.
Who will stop him?
Yeah, I feel about him the way I would feel about like Suge Knight, which is that we mm-hmm. should probably stop talking about this immediately.
I didn't say a thing. So
I just would like to be clear here. True. Everything I have said has been, I would argue, complimentary.
I wanted to address one reader's question by answering a little bit of it for you and then handing off. This is from Will Made Good.
Wow, typical.
How do you reconcile the coolness of Joe Burrow with Southern Ohio? I'm just going to go ahead and quote, after the game, when asked whether his diamond pendant medallion thing was real diamonds or not, he said, I make too much money to have fake diamonds.
Yep. While wearing a black turtleneck, which I'm wearing a black turtleneck right now, and I'm just saying, it's a look, and I'm into it. Also, he is definitely the most interesting person to come out of that particular area of southeastern Ohio, which could be why his high school has already renamed the stadium for him. You might think, that's a little soon, but in the mm-hmm. plains, it's not soon. It's real not, that's not soon. That's, I found, there was some article like Joe Burrow is in for a rude awakening at Arrowhead Stadium. And it's like, Joe Burrow doesn't care.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. he's played in Death Valley. He's like, they're just like, especially because I think that there's sometimes where you have like a welcome to the NFL moment, but if you have played high level SEC football, in some senses, not the play, because like every NFL player mm-hmm. is better than college football players. They just are. Like, that's just how it is. Like, the NFL is the top echelon of players. And then there's Jimmy Garoppolo, but he's very pretty.
So, like,
beautiful.
He
man.
Is. In his post game interview, I was like, damn. Like, damn. But, like, in terms of atmosphere, like, they're, you know, I am sure, like, I've had friends who've gone to playoff games at Lambeau. Like, it sounds great. But, like, Death Valley always seems like there could be a human sacrifice tonight. Maybe there will be. Maybe there won't
maybe
be.
Maybe it's
we
you.
Don't know. Yeah. Who could tell?
Yeah, I get that the NFL has, like, multiple, like, notably loud stadiums. So when they do the, like, oh, you can't handle Seattle. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, but they, you know, like, if you've played at Texas A&M and Alabama and Ohio State and like on and on, I think
I'm
be
not sure
fine.
Seattle Stadium is louder than UDubs.
Yeah, I don't understand. Like, yeah, you're gonna welcome to Arrowhead. I'm like, you got old people in there. They're tired.
They're brittle.
You're in Missouri now.
Welcome to Missouri.
Are you sure it's that Kansas City? Really sure?
That LSU, that 2019 LSU team also, like, you know, went to Alabama and dropped 46. And just pretty much like, yeah, we just don't care. We just do not care. And I do appreciate that this is the first meeting between Joe Burrow and Odell Beckham Jr. since the incident in which OBJ showed up and just started handing out money. And then there was like, he probably shouldn't have done that. But like, I was like, but they did it. They beat Clemson. He's just being nice.
2 years.
He's not even making them go to church to get the money.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Funding student athlete experiences.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2 years of Baton Rouge, by the way. Yeah. 2 years of Baton Rouge for Joe Burrow. This is what he comes in as. Ohio State transfer with zero swag. Joey Burrow, poor accuracy. 2 years in Baton Rouge and Cajun cooking left that man as Joe Burrow, number one draft pick, somehow became a style icon.
Even the pictures of him at Ohio State, like, he looks like Craig Krenzel. He's got like a white shirt underneath. Oh.
Life intervening to give you blessings.
A journey through Joey's social media from high school, like, nah, man, this dude had it all along. Like, he's posting on Instagram. He's posting the shit on Instagram. He's like, at dances, they don't let us grind, but student athletes grind all day. It's like, man, this guy was always it. This guy was always it. You can find him in fucking like 8th grade talking about like class sucks. Can't wait for football practice.
Pootie Tang is the greatest movie ever made. That is a Joe Burrow tweet.
Somebody put that side by side with like quarterbacks praising cops and stuff, and it's like, nah, we know who we're riding with. It's Joe Burrow. And the he said that my favorite tweet of his. He said, feeling like some Arby's. And I think he misspelled Arby's or something like that. Like, that's my guy. That's my guy.
What a darling.
These are all fantastic. They're not as great as the Jimmy Garoppolo LOL just saw a longboarder get hit by a car.
Jimmy G's tweets are fantastic. My favorite one every single year when the Niners get eliminated is trying to find some word to watch Entourage.
He's genuine, okay? He's 100% genuine himbo from the floor up.
Favorite quarterbacks.
Like, Jimmy, do you just want to go like have some light beers and watch Entourage? Yeah, man, that's what I want to do.
Meanwhile, Matt, on the other side in the Super Bowl, you have Stafford, who's like been around so long. Like, his like old pictures are from like pre-MySpace. Right? Mm-hmm. Like the picture of him doing the keg, holding up the keg with the girl or whatever.
We
like,
already knew about,
how is that photo in color? That's so old.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's funny because let me look this up real quick. Because I feel like Matthew Stafford and I's like.
No, I'm sorry. I got to stop you there, Jane. That's not a Matthew.
No, that's Matt.
That's Matt.
He'll be mad forever.
Maddie
Ice. I appreciate Maddie that Rice. Our ages map on in this very specific way.
Because he's
that,
starchy. Like,
he's born after, he was born in February 7th, 1988, but he's like in my, like, he was in college at the same time I was. He was drafted the year I graduated. So he is the first quarterback where I'm like, you can't call him old. Like, I'm like, yeah, sure. Sure, he's been
here. He comes,
like
the oldest player in the league. A miracle, 32.
Oh, Jane, wait until you're a little bit behind us, aged ones. But wait until the first coach who's younger than you.
Oh, we are edging dangerously close. Like we got
it's coming.
That, like. Calling people giving Colin Klein jobs, and it's funny because when you Google Colin Klein, they're like. Half of the pictures are him trying to look like a coach, and half of them are like him playing because he played 10 seconds ago. And like, it's I find it distasteful. Like we're getting we're in the like Like, there are a couple of coordinators who are younger than I am, and I'm like, all right, that's fine. Like, you got to be young and wily to be a coordinator.
No, it's not okay. You got to start getting mad at it now, or it's going to take you by surprise when it actually happens.
Yeah. I appreciate that for – I like that – I'm happy for Matthew Stafford, because if you go through his Wikipedia page on all those Lions seasons, I'm just like –
yeah. I'm delighted for him to get to do anything.
Nice.
He gets to do anything fun in his entire football career. Like, good, and, good.
And like, he won a game by doing what he is really, really good at, which is throwing a deep ball and then running like hell to spike the ball. He can run to spike a ball like no one has ever seen.
We have to keep reminding people that he's good. It seems like he is the quarterback who we most do that for. That with Matt Stafford, you still have to after years.
Well, look at him.
I mean, he's
sorry.
He's so Lions affiliated that even after a year with the Rams, you have to go, he's actually really good.
He has perpetual resting sleepy face.
He does.
Mm. And I think that's the problem. He always looks sleepy.
Shouts out to Odell Beckham too for finding a better spot in life. He started the year in Cleveland with Baker Mayfield.
Hey, then what?
And then
his dad found a YouTube video and his dad started posting. Next thing you know, he's in the Super Bowl.
Think about that. That his dad posted him into the Super Bowl. I know.
Thanks,
he's got athletic achievement
Archie
and talent
Manning's
behind
just
him, okay?
His teeth somewhere.
Odell Beckham Sr. was like, the power of social media
just
in
found,
my hands.
Just found
like
YouTube,
the sun.
YouTube videos of Baker Mayfield sucking and all, next thing.
That's
you know,
all he did. That's all it took. People have the NFL like, it's a league, it's a grind, it's for men. Odell Beckham posts a couple of hurtful videos about Baker Mayfield, and Odell Beckham Jr. teleports to Los Angeles. That's magic.
It's pretty easy.
Poof.
Speaking of
also,
these
it's
guys.
The most it's the most effective sports dadding we've seen in a long time. Like, we had that horrifying Lonzo Ball period of our lives. I hated that. Cool. And then now I'm like, did that? It kind of worked because it worked in that now all of his kids seem way less irritating than he is, which is, it's effective. Like, if you've got kind of like, you've got a heel, then everyone around you looks more babyface. And so, yeah, if you've just maybe there's just more good sports dadding happening and I just didn't know about it.
Yeah. I think with Lonzo, it's the thing where you tell your parents, oh, I got a D, and they're like, what? And you're like, just kidding. A C, right?
And they're
see?
Like, ah.
See, that's a lot. That's not so bad.
Yeah.
Like, My NFL fandom is so sad that I watched the Rams and I'm like, I just want Matt Ryan to be traded somewhere and get to do this.
Yeah.
I just want the best quarterback in franchise history to leave and get to win for someone else, because I've completely given up hope on him winning here. So like, watching Matthew Stafford is like, I'm like, oh, it's still possible. What, for your team to win? No, for our players to leave and then win. That's what I want.
Jason, if you could script a Twilight career for Matt Ryan, what would that look like?
Leading the Lions to the Super Bowl and winning it. How about that?
God.
Let's go all
he'll
in.
He'll be cold, but he'll be a hero. The cold will preserve
his muscles. They play indoors,
muscles.
And he's from Pennsylvania. Uh-huh. He's from Philadelphia, greatest city in America.
Oh, God, I keep forgetting that. He's the least Philly person I think I've ever known about.
Yeah, I think he had to leave because he's their only nice person.
Mm.
I would... I would laugh real hard if Odell Beckham and Odell Beckham Sr. ended up doing the Tim Montgomery celebration. If you remember, Tim Montgomery was the sprinter for Britain who famously in the Olympics pulls up lame, right? Like, he's injured, and his dad comes out of the stands and they like walk across the finish line together. Like, that's Odell Beckham Sr. this year. What are you
Spencer,
doing? I'm going to get you across the finish line, buddy.
Are you implying that was a work?
Yeah, I'm going to do that. Let's go ahead.
Okay.
Let's just go ahead.
Wow.
Yeah, total
okay.
work.
Wow.
Right. Wasn't winning the race, so oh, here comes Dad.
Number
just gonna go.
All right,
do that.
Wow.
Hot, no one else
hot,
will go out on that limb.
Olympics.
I just did it. Tim Montgomery's dad's gonna show up at my door in 7 minutes.
He's gonna be posting videos.
Beat my ass so bad.
You fucking
but you
up
know
takes.
What? He's gonna beat your ass, but he'll walk you to the finish.
That's the thing. Is he'll walk me to urgent care.
Walking.
I'll be like, he really is a great dad. So they're crying. He beat my ass so bad, but then he helped me. I love you, man. The Marines are behind us. Like, that's right, bro. That's right. That's how you do it. Jane, do you have any other final thoughts here on the Bengals?
I can't believe them in the Super Bowl. It's going to be like, it's weird because it's like the Super Bowl has always been like, it has existed as an entity about which caring has been like a choice. And now it's like, now I'm locked in. I'm in. And I'm like, oh, this is awful. Caring about the Super Bowl is the weirdest thing in the world.
Oh, yeah.
I don't recommend it. No. Like, I just, this is, what is it? It's Tuesday.
And you got a whole week and a half. You got like media days next week. That's going to suck. Yeah. And then there's when the Falcons were there last, it was the Friday night when I was like, holy fucking shit, this has been a lot. And like, there's still an entire day and then it's game day. Like, yeah.
I'm just like, you know, I'm like, I gotta, should I pick up a quick hobby? Like, should I learn to do something the next week? Because it just is like,
ooh, macrame.
I was going to get back, and when I was a kid, I used to, like, knit potholders, and no one ever used the potholder, but I just kept producing potholders. It was kind of like, it was a very Soviet armaments post-war, where it's just like, I'm just going to keep making this stuff. You're not using it. We'll just put it in a place. But
an oversized knit potholder is just a puppy blanket waiting to happen.
They'd appreciate, they could chew on it, and they would love that. They will chew on basically anything. But, it's real weird. It's disconcerting. I mean, I think that this is, I was trying to figure out how to write about this, and I'm not sure if I can come up with something, but there is something about, like, when it's your team, and it's, like, a team that isn't supposed to be there, like, not even the, like, nobody believed in us, and I'm like, no. No one believed in this.
Nobody should have believed in us.
Good fucking reason.
Like, if it turns out that, like, Zoroastrianism is true and that we should have just been worshipping Ahura Mazda this whole time, I will be shocked. That'll be a real thing that I'm going to be like, well, I did not see that. Like, genuinely, I did not believe in this. It's like that. The Bengals are Zoroastrianism. Maybe I should just get on board.
Yeah, the color scheme is very dualist.
Introducing your kids to finances and gift cards can be quite a task. You don't want to limit them with traditional gift cards that only work for one specific store, or give them a credit or debit card and have them run unsupervised. But don't worry, because something epic is here. The Epic Gift Card is a gift card for kids and teens that lets them spend safely and securely. The Epic Gift Card was created with kids and teens in mind, letting them freely use it at virtually any age-appropriate retailer they want. Epic was developed by experts to ensure it's perfect for your kids, giving you relief that it'll be used responsibly while they get to buy exactly what they want. From celebrating their daily victories to preparing them for a future financial responsibility to giving them a fantastic gift, with Epic, the sky's the limit for your kids. Visit epiccard.com today to learn all about this incredible gift card. That's epiccard.com. epiccard.com.